Hey, Jamie.
How are you, Keith?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm not doing too shabby. It's a little bit of a stressful week for me, just work-wise and stuff. Or actually, the last 2 weeks have been a little bit stressful, but things have kind of turned around a little bit, and I'm feeling pretty good right now. How about you?
I'm old, so I threw out my back.
Oh, no.
Dude, it sucks. It sucks. I usually never have back problems. I don't know, man. Last Sunday, I did something extremely athletic. I went to go turn my fan off in my room.
That's how it always happens.
Yeah. Well, you don't know how I turned my fan off. Like, I could have did like three flips. Yeah. And then I turned it off.
Living your ninja fantasy on the way to the fan.
Yeah.
I get it.
I parkour my fan turning off. So I was parkouring all over my room, and that's what did it. So I threw my back out. It was fine. I was like, oh, that felt kind of weird. And then like I went on, and then like the next morning I couldn't even like get out of bed. And went to the hospital, and they're just, yeah, you threw your back out. Here's some muscle relaxers, which muscle relaxers are, they're like horse tranquilizers, dude. Like I put one of those things in, and you can't even like try to stay awake. Gotcha. So yeah, that sucked. But so I haven't been as productive the last like 4 days or so. So, but besides that, I'm fine.
You're going to have to get a, an echo enabled, fan. Just hey lady, turn my fan on.
Dude, I'll still throw,
my back out.
I'll still throw my back out.
You really throw your head around when you're talking to your computers.
Is I'll still do the parkour part, and then I'll say, Alexa, turn off my fan.
Nice. Okay.
So, yeah. So I haven't been as productive the last 4 or 5 days, but I was pretty productive before then. So how are you?
Well, nice.
You want to start?
Yeah, I guess I can start with mine. Yeah, I'll start. I am going to lead off with my usual amount of disappointment in that I did not meet my goals. Go figure. But my main reason for not meeting my goals is just that I was kind of consumed by job stuff. But that doesn't mean I don't have interesting programming things to talk about.
Did you know that your job was going to be stressful?
I thought it was going to be a little bit. I knew I was like kind of cutting it close on a deadline that I had just by virtue of some scheduling stuff I had to do earlier in the course. But yeah, anyway, that wasn't a huge deal. I mean, that was a self-imposed sort of thing that I ended up getting myself stuck into. I did work on my Pokemon project a little bit and I found a bug in, I actually was using a library to import some cards from an API that hasn't been updated since 2016. And
this is an Elixir library?
Yeah.
They have like an Elixir wrapper around Pokemon APIs?
Oh, yeah, dude. I can just be like Pokemon.card get whatever, and it'll like hit this API. and it wraps, it uses HTTP or HTT poison, which is, you know, a standard HTTP library in Elixir. But it was like pinned to an old enough version that had a weak enough version pinning that it Hackney upgraded behind the scenes, but it upgraded to a version that had a really goofy bug in it. And then I couldn't get around that based on the version pinning inside of this library. So I'm probably going to submit a pull request to this project that hasn't been updated in 4 years, or I'm just going to like fork it for a brief moment and use my own upgraded version of it. But I ran into that.
Would you be against taking it over?
Oh, no, not at all.
Because it sounds like, since you're going to be working on it, and the person...
Yeah, well, it's funny because this thing's going to basically be relegated to a background job for me. I'll use it to periodically pull in any new information, but I don't want to have to make API calls when somebody hits my server.
Right.
So I'm going to have it, you know, upgrading stuff in background. But yeah, I'll use it in the back. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind taking it over. It wouldn't be a big deal. And it solves a problem that I was like, oh, I can, why don't I tried to just get rid of it. I was like, I'll just use poison myself and just hit the API, right? Like this will be fine, except for it's like, it's a bunch of nested maps, right? And they all have, like, by default, JSON has string keys. So it's going to have string keys. And I think when you use JSON, the JSON serializer, and you tell it to decode with atom keys, I'm pretty sure it only does the top level. It doesn't do it all the way down.
Doesn't do deep.
Yeah. So that wasn't my problem. My problem was that it also comes back and it's like a .NET service or something. So the keys are in camel case, And all my code was using this library that had snake cased everything in the process. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, there's, I'll be able to do this. And I'm like, that's actually a big job to snake case literally every key in this dynamic multi, like super nested hash.
Or map, I have a related issue with that, by the way.
Oh, okay. Nice.
I'll bring it up later, but
okay.
We'll put a pin in it.
Gotcha. We'll continue to talk about the annoyances of snake case versus camel case.
Sure. I mean, people are going to be on the edge of their seats.
Yep. It's really, we should just all switch to kebab case. You know, that's just how it is.
I don't know what that is, but actually
kebab case is when you put the dashes in it. Like most languages don't even allow that.
That's right.
Like I've only heard it in real life. I called that using, I've heard dash cased before, but I heard it in kebab case when I was doing some stuff with Vue once. And I was like, that is amazing.
I remember seeing that somewhere where somebody's like explaining like all the cases. And I remember seeing kebab case there. That's a pretty, actually pretty good name.
Yeah. I thought it was great.
It's got the skewer. Like, it's got the skewer going through it.
It makes sense. It goes right through the middle. So yeah. But anywho, so I ran into that issue and I tried to get around it. And eventually I ran out of free programming time for that individual session that I was in. And I was like, okay, I'll come back to this later. And then I didn't, because I was just kind of doing other stuff with work. But that was because I got kind of a little, what's the best way? I got a little side tangent thing I did where we're kind of migrating some stuff to Asana for task management. And I worked with Asana when I was at Squaremouth doing some automation stuff. We actually had it like pretty well automated to do pretty neat things. And I was like, oh yeah, we can totally do this. So I wrote like a little kind of library, or not library. I added a feature to a Chrome extension that I have that would take a course outline and turn it into like a bunch of tasks that are like set up dependencies on other tasks and have subtasks in them. So like it just kind of lays out all of the work that goes into doing what we do. And it was an interesting thing to work on, because I'm like, dude, this is going to take forever. Cause it literally takes like probably close to 1,000 API calls to do some of like a course of significant enough size. Right. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to go about making this all concurrent. So I'm like using a ton of promises and getting it all to like dispatch the stuff as much as I can. Like certain parts need to be synchronous so that they show up in the right order in the task list, but some things can be done completely parallelized. Mm-hmm. So I kind of went down this route and it totally works great, except for it still takes like 10 minutes to do it because Asana's API is super slow. And then after I ran it a couple of times, I was like, yeah, dude, this thing is awesome. It's really doing the thing here. And then I got random 500s from Asana just periodically in the middle. And I didn't have like exception handling set up with the concurrent stuff to where it would like bounce back and continue. And like certain tasks later on have dependencies on other tasks. So if those tasks were the ones at 500, then like you'd run into issues. So I had to go about implementing retry logic inside of my promises that were interacting with Asana's API and stuff. And I eventually got this thing done and it's pretty cool. It's just really slow. So I'm also working on an Asana relay service is what I'm calling it. Basically that is an Elixir backend service that I can just give like this huge payload of like tasks basically. And it will go and kind of do this work for me. And so I'm working on that a little bit too behind the scenes, using like some task supervision stuff to kind of get the automatic retries on things if the task of making this an individual API call fails. And it's just a little bit weird to think about how I'm like, okay, I need to dispatch these four things can go concurrently, but then inside of them, they have things that have to happen synchronously. Like this step one has to happen before step two, but it doesn't matter if the third batch is on step five already. So those are kind of the things I've been working on. And it's been pretty interesting. I've been enjoying myself.
Is this, so currently your job, they do all this Asana work manually? Like, does everybody need to do like put all these tasks in Asana?
This is a new thing. Like we're kind of moving to Asana.
Right. But did they do this in like GitHub or something before? Or like what?
It was a little bit more freeform. Oh, okay. Like some people use Trello. Like it kind of depended on the person making their course.
And now there's a company like mandate to use Asana.
Yeah, now we're moving. And we're like, all right, let's just have a centralized process for this.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, I've been helping out with that. And yeah, it's been pretty fun, though. Interesting to work on this stuff for sure. It took a few attempts to, it's really tough to build retry logic for HTTP calls into a Chrome extension. when you can't control that the thing is going to fail, right? Like, so it takes me forever to test this thing. I'm like, all right, I got to delete this course, generate this new thing. And it goes off and creates hundreds and hundreds of API calls. And like, sometimes none of them fail at all. And I go, well, dang it. Like, how am I supposed to know if this retry stuff fails? I have to delete the course, do it again. And there's no, like, because I don't know how to test stuff inside of a Chrome extension. I'm like, I don't know what to do here. Like, it's one of the, I'll be totally honest with you. This is my like playground to do random stuff with JavaScript. And it has zero tests because I literally don't know how to test a Chrome extension. And it's never been one of those things I thought was important enough to go invest the time to do it. Mm-hmm. And although to be, knock on wood, this thing's actually been pretty rock solid. With all the random stuff I've kind of built into it over time to like just automate little things that I need to do, it's worked surprisingly well. And I've done it in completely vanilla JavaScript.
Why is it a Chrome extension?
Because I needed to utilize some things that are in the page of different tools that I have. And then I wanted to like inject things in and like, I actually wanted to modify the UI in certain things that I want. Like, I'm like, it would be really cool if I had a button here that would like allow me to click it and it would do this stuff for me in the standard workflow. So it like has that kind of going on for it. And at the time it was kind of the best way. It was the only way I had to get an authorization token essentially that is given to the front end application, but like I myself don't have like an OAuth way of going and getting that. So I just kind of piggyback off of that. And that's the main reason why it's a Chrome extension.
Gotcha. Is this something that only you're going to use or is this something that the rest of the company?
This is something that I built for myself. And then eventually over time, I've like other people have been allowed to use it to the point that like now most training architects use it.
And this is something that you're hosting on some personal...
Oh, it's a Chrome extension. So, I mean, just...
Well, what about the Elixir stuff and all that?
Oh, the Elixir stuff, that is like an idea, right? Gotcha. If that like makes it to fruition, then I'm sure I can get it deployed on company resources.
Gotcha. So the Chrome extension doesn't talk to the Elixir stuff yet. You're just...
No, not yet. That's like a thing I've been playing with.
Gotcha.
Because I'm like, my big problem is that if somebody wants to go and import a bunch of stuff into Asana from a course or whatever... If it takes like 10 minutes, like that's like, okay, make sure your computer doesn't go asleep. Make sure like don't close that browser tab because literally the browser tab is doing all of the work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Your browser is also restricted to how many HTTP calls it can have simultaneously going, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I'm going to move this thing off to Elixir and see if I can like just super, you know, distribute it concurrently. Like, create every subtask at the same time. You know what I'm saying? Like just go down the line. These aren't dependent on anything. You can create them all. And so that's what I kind of want to see what it would look like if I just throw this thing out there and like supervise some tasks and just spin up like 10,000 processes for it and just let it go to town. And I think it could be one, the retry stuff is like baked in, super easy to do in Elixir.
Yep.
There is also a Dockyard blog post that I found that was like, oh, if you don't want to use gen servers, you can also do it using recursion because that's something that totally makes sense to do inside of a functional language that has tail call optimization.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
But yeah, so you can do that. You can use a task supervisor or you can just create a gen server that kind of does some like its own stuff and spins up its own processes behind the scenes. So there are different ways to do it, but I'm like, this just makes sense to do this. And it should be able to alleviate that situation. And if somebody can click this button in the browser, it goes off and does this thing. And then if, you know, they have to close their laptop and go away, I can just have it send them an email when it's done. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I think that's a better solution, but it's going to take a little bit more time for me to kind of architect it.
That sounds cool, man. That sounds fun.
Yeah. It's been a lot of fun to work on.
So did you get any further besides the issue with the library on your Pokemon?
No, that was legitimately the last thing I did with it. And that was probably a week and a half ago.
Do you have a name for this application you're working on?
So have you ever played Pokemon?
No, I haven't. Okay. I've seen it played, but I haven't played it. No.
Okay. So in Pokemon, there's a concept of the Pokédex, like DEX, which is like the collection. It's basically the encyclopedia of Pokemon. Like it has all the information about them.
Mm-hmm.
But so in this case, but you're building decks like DECK, Jesus, you know, a deck of cards. Mm-hmm. So I have Pokedex.net as my domain name. And I don't think that's something that the Pokemon company will sue me about as like a copyright infringement, since it's not, even though the word sounds the same as a thing that is in their games, but it is not spelled the same and has like a different. So I'm hoping I won't get in trouble for that. But that's the current name. It's just Pokedex.
Is there a, I wonder if there's a dot deck, D-E-C-K.
There is not. I think I looked.
Yeah.
I
TLD. Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, just, but then it would be poke.deck. Yeah, because where you would be putting the period would make it a little
weird. Telling people what the name, what the URL is would be tricky. You'd have to spell it out every time.
Yeah. So that's,
I wonder if there's a dot card TLD. I'm infatuated with all these new TLDs. So
yeah, well, I look at them a lot of times and I go, okay, this would be, you know, because the .coms are so hard to find a lot of times. .co's are hard to find. Like, and which annoys me to no end, because almost every single time I'm building something and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go get me this thing, it's like just squatted on. Nobody's actually using it. And that always bothers me. Yeah. But yeah, that's just how it goes. But yeah, the new TLDs are great for that, where you're just like, oh, okay, cool. But then unfortunately, since anybody can create them, right, with a sufficient amount of money, like, do you know what the process is to create a new TLD?
Yeah. Well, not exactly, but I remember reading about what Google had to go through to get, like, I think they own like .blog and they own a couple more, but I think they own .dev. Yeah, but I know it's a lot of money, and then you have to like get, I don't know, there's some body, some governing body that approves or disapproves.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure ICANN, like this, are the people on top. But yeah, you have to pay. And I think it's like,
I thought it was just like Al Gore. I think it was just Al Gore.
That, it's just, he just like, yeah. I think
he just gets an email.
Dot porn should be a thing. So here you go. Right. But yeah, that's, I think it's a non-refundable amount too. It's like you spend like, it's $250,000. Yeah, like I know it's like, it's at least that much, I feel like.
Yeah.
And then if you get it, then you are the governing body for that TLD, which means you're the one who makes the money from, you know, people selling it. So what happens is like somebody like went out and paid for this thing, and then you'll get these TLDs that are like, oh yeah, it's $1,500 to buy one of these things. And you're like, oh, that kind of sucks.
Yep.
It's a bit of a bummer. Like, I'll just use the .net. It's $15. Like,
right.
That's the current name anyway. And hopefully one of these days it'll be out the door, but, or at least in beta, I guess.
How much, like, so what's your plans for the next 2 weeks? Let's make them realistic so we can like,
I know, right? Like, oh gosh. So mine, I'm still like, I didn't mess with the database stuff at all, cause I was just trying to pull my cards back in, cause I noticed that I was getting an error and I couldn't actually do anything from the way I had previously been doing it. So yeah, I want to get that fixed. That'll be my first thing probably, is I want to at least get that client library fixed, whether that's I reach out to the person and take it over, or at least submit a pull request that gets it updated. I'm going to resolve that issue for myself and then work on the database stuff. I might not get it deployed, right? Let's take the deployment side out of this. Although I think it'll be pretty easy, because I'll probably steal the work that we did on active backgrounds.
Nice.
But this is on GitHub, so I'm probably going to use GitHub's like actions to do my deployment stuff and whatever. Ooh. So that's also on my list too, which I didn't.
Ooh, I'm going to steal that from you then, because I want to move back to GitHub, I think.
Yeah. That's... Well, the cool thing is the actions, you can make them, you can put them on like the action marketplace and somebody can just install them, which is neat. And it just adds a file to your repo. And so like there's an Elixir one that is literally like, oh, you're using an Elixir project. You probably want to run mix compile, mix test or whatever. And so you can be like, yeah, give me that. And then you can take that as a starting point and modify it from there. So like you need to add a database and stuff like that. So I'm going to go down that route too. But
and doesn't GitHub have the idea of like these runners like GitLab does now? Don't they have like
they might, I don't know.
Yeah, because I remember
that
them
might
reading,
be like a premium feature or something. Yeah,
or it might be in beta still or something, because I remember reading that you can like build on Macs now.
Yeah.
And, oh, that's cool. Yeah, so then I wouldn't have to pay for the Mac Stadium stuff. Nice. to build this project. So
okay, yeah, so I'll keep you up. Those are my goals right now. I want to update the client library, get my database stuff figured out, and deployment will probably be the week after.
Nice. All right, cool, man. 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So tell me about yours. your 2 weeks, and then let's also commiserate how annoying casings are on variables.
Was that the pin we put in? Oh, yes, yes. Okay.
Yes, it was the snake case versus camel case.
Yeah, this week was, or this last 2 weeks were kind of focused on fixing bugs and getting kind of deployment set up. One bug that was very annoying because you couldn't really use the app was the when the app went to sleep, you'd just be disconnected from the WebSocket. Mm-hmm. So
yep.
You'd have to like shut down the app and open it back up and log back in and do all this stuff. So I fixed that. It was actually pretty easy. There's an app state hook in Expo. Mm-hmm. So you can get events when that you can register for when the app goes in. There's like three states in iOS apps. It's active, inactive, and then background. So like inactive happens like when you like, let's say you like, you know, swipe up to like find another app. So it kind of puts it in the background. That's kind of inactive.
Oh, okay.
And then like if you leave that app, then that's kind of the background, like that goes in the background.
Gotcha.
So it was pretty easy to kind of hook these up. You just basically in Expo in React Native, you had to like push those events down to the components that really cared about it. Once I did the research and found that out, and I thought I probably fixed it. And the reason I don't know is because when I would deploy the application, it would crash immediately.
Oh, okay.
When I would use it from test flight. And what I found, okay, so this was hard to find because, you know, if you're doing it in test flight and that happens, you'll get like one of those boxes like, hey, do you want to tell the developer about this issue? Mm-hmm. And so I was using it. I said, yeah, you know, I don't know what happens when you do that. So I was like, yeah. Anyway, basically it doesn't send you an alert unless I don't have that set up correctly. So it doesn't send me like an email that somebody had a problem. You just kind of have to check.
Oh, weird. That,
there might be a setting that I haven't found, but
I guess that probably makes sense. They're thinking about it on like large scale beta deployment, probably. Like,
yeah,
you want to kind of aggregate them in a dashboard that you're going to periodically check because you're a professional iOS developer, you know, right. That sort of business.
So, but what that gives you is like a crash dump. And this got me like a little scared about like supporting this application because I was crash dumps. I hope there's more information in other ones, but basically it just says, hey, something happened in the NS Expo controller.
Right? Oh, crap. Yeah.
So I'm hoping like there's more information.
Gotcha. So it only shows you, like it shows you this is where it crashed in the Objective-C harness that
exactly.
you have.
Exactly.
Essentially that, exactly. Yeah, that sucks.
And I did notice, like, if I would switch over to production and I run it in the simulator, so I switch the URLs and everything to point to production,
mm-hmm.
in the debug, in the Expo test harness or whatever they have going there in the background, in the client application, it doesn't actually crash. But you can tell that there's an issue because, like, the timer doesn't show up or anything like that.
Gotcha.
So it was hard to, like, I was like, oh, crap, how am I going to duplicate this, you know? But what I found... why it was happening in production and not in development was a data issue in okay. that my workflow that I was trying to connect to was completed.
Oh.
Right? Because I just hit play at one time on my production and I just let it go, right? So when I opened it back up, that workflow was completed. And something in that state that I get back from the WebSocket or probably from the from the accounts connected event that gets emitted,
mm-hmm.
my application doesn't know how to deal with that state and it crashed, right? It's probably looking for something and something's null and it crashed. There's two issues that I found with that. One, it doesn't, our application currently doesn't emit like a workflows completed event. And it doesn't do that because it wasn't in that inflection table, I found out. So we have this inflection table like-
Oh, really?
To get the past tense of something. Because when, like, let's say you press pause, I'll explain this for the three people that are listening. When you hit pause, right, we send back a pause event, and then the Elixir server sends out a paused event to all the other and to all the other devices that are listening. So like your Mac app can then pause or whatever. So we are sending out a complete event, but not the completed event. So once I fixed that, I wrote a test and got that working. But now... then I was sitting there thinking, okay, well, what happens if a workflow is completed? Like, what do we want to do? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if we wanted to just use that same process over again for the next Pomodoro for the next workflow, which is stupid. We don't want to do that. Once I thought about it, I was like, no, we just want to shut that process down, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I started working on, so that when it gets a completed event, it goes and stops that timer and shuts that timer down. And that's about as far as I got until I busted my back. So,
oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So I know what I need to do. I'm hopefully going to finish that today. There's kind of two things that go along with that is, one, clear that timer out. And then two, have the application be able to deal with that state, whether or not they get the completed event or not. But like that state of like no current step or whatever the issue is there.
Yeah.
The application has to deal with that. So that's like the one remaining pretty big bug that's left.
So what's your current idea of what you're going to do to handle that when you have a no current workflow step?
On the client side?
Yeah.
I want to see what the shape of that state is exactly on the client side. I think I know it, but I haven't really documented it because there's a difference of what the state is in the timer process versus what we actually send to the client. Mm-hmm. And then I have like a workflow reducer, I'm calling it, on the client side that goes and like tries to line up workflow templates with workflows. And so it's in this nice dictionary object that JavaScript can handle well. So I have to handle what that state is and probably clear that out of cache and then go ahead and do what Accounts Connected does and start have a blank workflow.
Yeah.
No workflow started.
In that screen where it's like your first workflow hasn't been started yet.
Right. Right. With the play button.
And that makes sense.
So yeah, that's what I plan on fixing.
Okay.
The next thing I was going to work on. Let me talk quickly about what I'm talking about with the camel case and the snake case. Mm-hmm. The problem I have in the iOS app is that sometimes I'm dealing with camel case and sometimes I'm dealing with snake case. The times when I'm dealing with camel case is when I'm using the GraphQL stuff.
Oh, crap. Yeah.
Yeah. So our WebSocket stuff, obviously there's no like schema or something like that. They can say, hey, this is the shape that I want my data to come in, like you can with GraphQL. Mm-hmm. So sometimes like the IDs, like the workflow IDs, when it comes from GraphQL are, you know, strings with numbers represented as strings. And then they're in camel case. And then there's a few other little odds and sods there. But when you get it from the WebSocket API, it's not like that. So I'm trying to think of a way to, I would like any client to be able to like say, hey, I want this represented in X way or Y way when you're dealing with the WebSocket stuff, almost like specifying a schema. Mm-hmm. But I'm not quite sure how to do that yet. I haven't really put too much thought into it, but I think that's the direction to go to instead of like writing something on the client to like transform everything to the case you want it to, because then every client's going to have to do that. And that just seems like a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if there's like some call or something you can make over the WebSocket or maybe on Connect or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You send over like, what would you even say? Yeah. Right. Like, do you say camel case me? Right. When you send the message over, or you specify your language, right? You're like JavaScript and it'll be like, okay, cool. I know JavaScript is a camel. That's where the camel case homies are at.
Right. And, right.
Except for not really like, JavaScript's not even consistent in its style.
Right. Or you could say like what you can do on GraphQL is like, hey, when I get this type of message, this is the schema for that message. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot of work, but
that does seem like a lot of work. You're basically wanting to implement WebSocket GraphQL which is totally a thing, right? I've never messed with subscriptions, but I don't think it would work for this anyway. Yeah. So yeah, that's complicated.
Yeah. It's not something that obviously needs to be done right now, but it's just something that I'm getting like all these because of prop types and React. You know, you always get these errors like, hey, it's expecting a string, but you give it a number type of stuff. Wait. So
oh really?
Yeah, because the IDs and stuff, right? They're integers when they come over.
Yep. Yeah.
From yep. So
yeah, that's a nightmare stuff right there when you're dealing with just inconsistencies between those various types of responses that you're getting back.
The other thing I could do is like have GraphQL send me camel case, but that sounds icky as well. I think.
You mean Snake Case?
Snake Case, yes. Sorry. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So GraphQL gave me the Snake Case version. But my next goal is to work on the sounds stuff that I was mm-hmm. going to work on before I blew my back out. I was on the right path to get that done. But
you were on pace to
I was
to
on get pace, the sound. But then I had to parkour on my fan. Title. So yeah, and so I'm gonna finish that. And then I have like a few more big things to do before I consider like the iOS app, quote unquote, done mm-hmm. before I start moving over to the Mac app. So my goal is, and I'm going to state it right here on this podcast.
All right.
Is to get the iOS app done. Meaning like you can log off, you can switch workflows. You won't be able uh-huh. to edit workflows.
Yeah, that's kind of the big one right now. It's like you only have one workflow that you can use in that.
Yeah, and it sucks for testing. Right, and it sucks for testing. Like I have to wait till like all these Pomodoros are done to like get like the workflows completed, you know, event.
Oh yeah. So you don't have the ability to be like, oh, I have this super short workflow that I've built that is like only 15 seconds long.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of considerations too, to like say when you switch a workflow, like what happens? Mm-hmm. Like, can you switch a workflow in the middle of doing a Pomodoro or, you know, your current workflow?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a funny one because it depends on who you talk to, I would think. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like my idea is like, if you switch workflows, you just can that last one. You just cancel it right where exactly. it's at and say, this is where it was cut off.
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah. Cause I think it would be really weird to reconcile like, no, you just pause the workflow indefinitely. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. Like it wasn't really a workflow if you did a billion things in between one step to the other.
Yeah. And we've built kind of the back end and I've built kind of the client to allow for multiple timers. Mm-hmm. That's not going to be like a V1 ability, but those kind of
that does
ways
work.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember because the Mac app had the ability to list and let you switch different workflows. Last time I was working on it and I was like, oh, look how cool this is that you can like kind of do that. I think you've changed the schema for how things are returned back from the API now. Cause remember we had that whole discussion about like, should it even be returning like workflows in this certain structure? And like, that's where the workflow reducer came in. And I don't think I ever worked that stuff into the Mac app, but yeah, I remember that being a concept, but yeah, it's a little weird on iOS, right? Like,
yeah.
Almost feels like it shouldn't have things going on in the background, but that's just because you're only really ever going to see one prominently, but that doesn't make sense either. So yeah, I guess, yeah, it makes sense to have multiple going on, but you might not pause it.
Yeah. But I think I am going to like do what you said is, hey, it's just going to, it'll cancel probably it. Say, are you sure? And then it'll cancel the current one and start off with a new one. So we'll have that. And then the other big thing is to be able to create, I think I'm calling them like workflow step instances or whatever that like running workflow is and stats on what that was. So like when you started it, you know, what events happened during it? Did it pause? Did you, you know, and when did it end? And then those will be stored in the database. Right. And then it'll also have like a project and a description to it. So you can say, hey, I worked on this and I did this. And eventually that will plug into like your time trackers and stuff.
Oh, so you're going to work that into the actual, workflow itself, like the workflow step.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to do the integration yet, the plugin for like the time trackers.
Yeah. That makes sense though. Like, because you were talking last time we spoke about how you were kind of running into this weird thing with plugin state and how you were kind of opening Pandora's box for like anything to be stored in there. But if you have the notes be part of it and you're kind of controlling that as a thing, and then plugins can read off those notes potentially, then I think that kind of makes it a little bit more safe and kind of restricts the scope back a little bit so that you're not building for V1, like the super dynamic, you know, UI builder with custom states on the plugins and stuff. Right. Like there's a lot of weird stuff that you could get into, but I think to get it out the door, this is like a really good first step.
Yeah. So those are kind of the two big things that I want to get done. And I think I can get them done in the month of March and then move my concentration over the Mac app. So
I think you were going to tell us a date that you are going to have.
Oh, I'm sorry. The end of March or the beginning of April 1st. My plan is to have.
Okay. So April Fool's Day.
Yes. Always good to plan stuff for April Fool's Day.
It's the best day to say, hey, I'm launching this thing.
Exactly. It's the best day to be on the internet.
Yeah. Oh, God. April Fool's Day. I hate it so much.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm not going to like launch anything. That's the day I want to complete.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. That's a good goal. So you have the whole month of March to patch up these things, implement some big features, mm-hmm. and get yourself to a really usable spot. That sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Cool, man. So anything else?
No, I think we should wrap this up. We're steadily getting longer as we go on. Our podcasts have been getting, I think if we keep it under 45 minutes, I'll be okay.
I'm fine with like having a couple long ones and short ones. I don't think we should cut it off at some random period. If the conversation's going, but
I think we had some good conversation this time around. So
cool, man. Well, great to chat with you.
Yeah, it's been good. Try not to parkour and hurt yourself anymore in the next 2 weeks, but I will talk to you in a few weeks.
Parkour.
Bye.